Good morning, and it's good to be here. I thought that I would start out by talking a little bit about the regional context and reflecting back on the fact that we've been through this before. Just a couple of days ago, I came across an assessment of the last major U.S. government response to a drought in the Horn of Africa. Many of you were involved in that, the Greater Horn of Africa Initiative. And it was really, and that was roughly the period of 1995 to 2000. And it was really interesting to read it because it reminded me that, you know, we're not operating in a vacuum here. We have been working on many of these issues for a long time, and it was also interesting. It was encouraging for me to see where we've made some progress and also where we haven't made some progress. And also, I think I'm going to talk a little bit about some of how some of the things in the region are different from that previous period. One of the things that I noted was that the principles of the Greater Horn of Africa Initiative are very similar to the ones that we're talking about now: African ownership, linking relief and development, the importance of regional approaches. So it's not like we didn't think about this stuff before, but obviously we didn't always pull it off and implement it as well as we would have liked to. This assessment said that one of the principal weaknesses of the strategy at that time was not taking sufficient account or paying sufficient attention to conflicts and dealing with conflicts. And what happened as a result was that the resources that were dedicated to the Greater Horn of Africa Initiative were overwhelmingly went towards a humanitarian response. And so there was less resources dedicated to development. And I think that, in turn, affected the ability to really focus on this linkage between relief and development, because there was so much of a focus on the crisis response and the humanitarian response, and we didn't do a very good job of making that linkage between the humanitarian and the development activities. Another point that was highlighted was that we didn't do a very good job of emphasizing regional approaches, even though that was one of the principles of the strategy. But the implementation of it didn't follow the principles. And I think partly that's because we didn't have such strong regional institutions. And that's one of the things that's really changed between that period of time and now. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. The good news is that that strategy, as well as other donor efforts and African government efforts, did recognize the importance of regional approaches and put in place things like some regional agricultural networks and health networks and conflict networks. But there's still more to be done. USAID's own development assistance focused primarily on crop production. Of course, there was some variation from country to country, depending on the country context. However, focusing on the pastoral areas was difficult for a number of reasons, including that many of them were just in a complex emergency situation, and it was really very difficult to do very much with respect to pastoralism. By contrast, you just heard Greg talk about the very, very strong focus of the program the response that we're now talking about towards pastoralism. And the fact that we're able to do that is in part because there is also somewhat less conflict now than there was at that time. At the time, the African governments themselves recognized the importance of trade liberalization, of creating a better environment for private sector investment, and began to work on those issues. They also recognized themselves the importance of regional approaches and organizations. And I think that the situation that we're in today reflects the fact that they recognized that and began to work on those things. So how are things different now? For one thing, for most of the East and Central Africa, you've got countries that have, for the last few years, really seen very good economic growth. And that's, you know, that's a very positive setting for this particular initiative. Regional trade has increased, and also trade between East Africa and like markets in the Middle East has increased. And so those are I think, very positive factors that bode well for the investments that we're going to be making now to have a greater impact than they may have had in the past. There are, as I mentioned, there is still conflict in the region, of course, notably in Somalia, but there's a lot of local-level conflict in these pastoral areas on the borders. But it's overall less than in that previous period. Also, as I mentioned, there are the regional institutions that we need to work with to accomplish some of these objectives with respect to regional trade integration and dealing with regional conflicts are much stronger than they were at the time. An example of that is, I think, over the last decade, roughly, the African Union has become much, much more active. I note that probably somebody was telling me that that the African Union has somewhere in the neighborhood of 24 treaties that have been put into force during its lifetime. And 17 of them have been put into force in the last decade, so obviously it's become more active over time. And quite a number of these treaties are important foundations for resilience. And in addition to treaties, there's various other policy frameworks and things like that that focus on these issues, notably the policy framework for pastoralism in Africa, which was approved in January 2011. So I think that reflects the fact that there is a recognition and a stronger commitment to these kinds of issues on the part of the African countries themselves. IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, is taking this issue very seriously. It is not a very strong organization right now. There's a lot of concerns around capacity of IGAD. However, I think that there's also recognition amongst many of the donors that we need this organization and that we need to make a serious commitment to strengthen it, to provide leadership specifically around these issues of resilience in the Horn. As you know, and I think Jeff's going to talk more in detail, IGAD has been leading a process of developing a regional CADEP compact, building on the CADEP compacts in individual countries. And, I mean, you really can't do that without having a regional organization. IGAD is also involved in the conflict side of the equation. There is a conflict early warning and response mechanism known as CWARN that operates along the borders of Kenya, Uganda, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Djibouti, and Somalia. And they work with communities and governments to predict conflict over natural resources and other things and help the host, the governments to be able to respond to those to try and, minimize them if possible or at least be ready to respond to them. So, there's more capacity now than in the past to deal with some of these conflict issues. I would also note that the East African community is a much stronger organization now than it was in the past. They established a common market for the East African community in 2010. And there's a lot of work going on within the EAC as well as within COMESA on reducing trade barriers, discouraging protectionism, and these kinds of things are going to be very important in the future in increasing food security, because even though there is some variability in terms of the impact of drought situations across countries, so the more that you have free-flowing regional trade, that can help mitigate some of the impact in countries where you have countries that are less affected. At the country level, I think we're also seeing increased attention at senior levels of government to these issues, appreciation for them. The most notable example would be the Heads of State Summit that was called in September of last year to address, to discuss response to the drought situation in the Horn. I believe all the heads of state of the IGAD member countries participated in that, and they produced a statement that made really very serious commitments. Now, of course, you know, it's a statement, and we all know that you have to follow up those good words with actions. But I think we are also seeing some evidence that those commitments are going to be backed by actions. For example, Ethiopia has a national investment plan that reflects many of the commitments to invest more heavily in the arid and semi-arid lands than it has in the past. So, I mean, we'll see that Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda are working right now with donors on various investments, and so, of course, the jury is still a bit out on how that process plays out, but I think there's reason for optimism. I would also note that, and I think Greg touched on this a little bit as well about the private sector. There are more actors other than the traditional donors and governments now than in the past. And clearly, the role of the private sector has come up, We and African governments and other donors are working more intensively on public-private partnerships. You also have the rise of very substantial foundations, you know, Gates, Buffett, who are interested in these issues. You also have the rise of non-traditional donors. Turkey, for example, is becoming a very important development partner in the Horn of Africa and is very interested in being engaged financially, but also you know, in terms of policy and whatnot. So that's a new dynamic. And then you also have, it's small, but still the rise of African philanthropy. An example of that would be the Kenya for Kenyans initiative that we saw during the response. So the environment is different. There are many new developments and that I think are reason for optimism that this time around that we'll make more progress than we have in the past. So I'll stop there. Thank you.